Hey now, we are getting over, and I am the Silver King, Adam Silverstein, here to lead you through these hard times. With your AEW Dynasty instant analysis. That's right, Getting Over is back once again, and we are here just moments after the conclusion of the inaugural AEW Dynasty pay-per-view to break down every single thing that happened on AEW's second pay-per-view of the year. We're going to give you the entire match card broken down by what happened in those matches, analysis of those matches, and we're hitting you with some grades as well, both for the matches and the entire show. All of that still to come tonight on the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast. Before we get to that, we need to get to this. And that is a reminder that this show
is all about Defy.
So head on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple. Take a little extra time. Leave a 5-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. It is also where you can vote in pre- and post-show polls surrounding pay-per-views like these, or, of course, WWE's premium live events, and we utilize your opinions in our post-game analysis, which you will hear again later on this episode. Please also remember,
I happen to love the number 5.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Overhead. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Sign up. You get bonus audio, instant reactions, the fastest 5 minutes in professional wrestling. We cover Raw, NXT, Dynamite, and SmackDown every single week. You also get exclusive news posts on Friday. Again, all of that at buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Now, this is the juncture of the show for these pay-per-views and premium live event instant analysis, where we crack open a cold one. And unfortunately, you're not going to hear the sound today. The Silver King is drinking Passion Pit from Saltwater Brewing right here in Delray Beach, Florida. Vintage Chris Vanini is here along for the ride. Chris, what do you have over there?
I've got from Austin East Ciders here in Texas, a passion fruit cider.
All right, that's a strange coincidence. We do not time this out.
No, we don't. We did not. We realized we had to grab something. We each...
I just ran and grabbed the first one I saw. I swear to you. Yeah. That's so crazy. Okay. I'm not even a passion fruit guy. Like, I'm happy to have a key lime flavored beer or apple or orange or whatever the case. Passion fruit is not my deal. So the fact that I have this, let alone grabbed it tonight, and you're drinking a passion fruit cider or whatever that is, pretty damn funny. All right. Look, we got a ton to talk about today. Normally, you and I would go through some nice lighthearted banter at the start of the show, but I got to tell you, we got a ton to talk about from AEW Dynasty, and we have a ton of performance-enhancing audio coming your way this week on the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast. We will give you our schedule at the end of this episode. Chris, let's dive right into the AEW Dynasty instant analysis, and the only note I'm going to give to everyone right before we start here is there were individual elements from AEW Collision and Rampage on Saturday night that will get factored in to some of these breakdowns, just because if not, then we have no other opportunity to discuss them on the show. And Chris, in terms of the overall environment, that's usually the way we start this. The crowd was immense in St. Louis. I thought they were fantastic. You know, it was less than 7,000 people. You could say for a show with a card of this quality, matches of this quality, it would have been really cool to have a lot more people in the arena. I also thought it was interesting they went with the standard set. They didn't do something special or different for the pay-per-view like they have done occasionally in the past. I didn't mind any of that, but it, to me, lacked a little bit from a pageantry standpoint. And that usually has not been an issue with AEW.
Look, I always prefer a full house to a big house.
That's fair.
And that place was packed. You know, I other than a couple of, you know, panoramic shots, I had forgotten that it was in a quote-unquote smaller arena. Mm-hmm. As long as you see the fans are into it, they're loud.
They're loud.
That's all I need. And they really were for this.
Yes.
The stage, I didn't remember if they had a new stage for Revolution or not. Sometimes they don't do the special stages. But yeah, nothing new for Dynasty. I did like the logo, the Dynasty mm-hmm. logo, really well graphic design there. So yeah, no, good environment, good crowd. And spoiler alert, really good show.
Yes. And I actually like the color scheme as well. We don't really talk about that too frequently, but just the whole thing, it came across nice from like a logo presentation standpoint. I just thought they could have done a little bit more from a pageantry in arena, but you're right. The most important thing is a loud crowd. And this St. Louis crowd was undoubtedly loud. That was the key. So we're going to start where AEW finished. And then other than that, we're going to break down the card in order more so of importance than anything else. So let's start with the AEW Championship, the main event, Samoa Joe defending against Swerve Strickland. So Swerve entered in a Black Panther getup. Joe did the ditch spot. Swerve landed and dropkicked him. Then Joe caught him flying out of the ring for a uranage on the announce table lid. Joe exposed the concrete floor, threatened Muscle Buster, but hit a power slam. He also had a great sweep kick of Swerve's knees. Much later, a buckle bomb and Muscle Buster led to a false finish. Joe grabbed the title, but ate house call on the apron, a draping 450, and then he had to get himself in place for a Swerve stomp and another false finish. Joe and Swerve both missed belt shots. Then Swerve broke Coquina clutch and snapped his arm. House call, false finish. Swerve jumped over Joe while on the ropes. I think this was supposed to be a draping Swerve stomp that was botched. Maybe they weren't in position. So he powerbombed him from underneath, slowly raised the crowd while they got on the top rope, and hit a second Swerve stomp to become AEW champion, the first black man to hold the top title in company history. Confetti and pyro, really nice pop from the fans, a strong main event. I kind of kept waiting for Hangman Page to beat his ass because they lingered on him for so long. I'm like, oh my God, there's going to be a post-match. And it wasn't necessary. It probably would have ruined the moment if they did it, but I had it in my head for some reason. And look, there's really not that much to say about this match. So I'm going to go back and remind you what I said when WWE released Swerve. It was one of the most boneheaded decisions that they could have made from a talent standpoint, because he was a star in the making that just needed opportunity. Now, this started slower than I would have liked his time with AEW, but Tony Khan recognized the potential and the fan reaction, and he went for it with him. Is strapping up Swerve going to put asses in seats and pull in ratings? I can't say that for sure. Does it make me far more interested in the product as a viewer? Definitely. And let me be clear, I love Joe. So it's not that I disliked him or anything like that. But Swerve, you know, he's the youth movement. He's the present and the future of the industry. And I'm just thrilled that he's getting this opportunity at this juncture in his career. It's the first time I ever saw him was wrestling indie house shows on WrestleMania weekend, I think probably 7 years ago at this point. He was nowhere near WWE. And then I knew he had it. Well-deserved for a guy with his talent, his drive, his sky-high ceiling. Like I said, not much really on the match. It was pretty good. Predictably laid out with really no realistic false finishes. I'm glad it was clean. Really, the only thing missing here was a reason to cheer Swerve, because as I've noted many times, he never had a redemptive moment as a babyface. He never did anything where it said all of a sudden, this is a good guy. But that's okay. The fans love him. He's the new champion. 4 stars A-. Might be overrating it a touch. That's how I felt.
Yeah, real solid match. I think these two guys have solid chemistry together. You know, like not 5-star classics, but they're really good and they're really physical with each other. These guys hit each other hard, and that works with Joe. Obviously, the right winner here. Swerve has been riding a lot of momentum. It just seemed like a matter of time before he would get the belt. And to your point, like, I still think there's so much room for him to grow, to become that superstar level. And I mean that in a good way. He is deserving of being the champion. And yet there is still so much more I think he can do and they can get out of him. So that's exciting. I'm curious to see how he goes as champion. Joe was, he took the belt off of MJF in what, December, I think? So a longer reign than I think most of us would have expected, but it was, again, like solid. He's a reliable guy, a good heel. It blows my mind. He's 45 years old.
Unbelievable.
I know he's not the old Samoa Joe, but he's still really, really good at what he does. So really good job by everybody involved. Swerve, like I listen to the pod every week, the AEW NXT pods, and I know you've made the point forever. There's no reason that Swerve became a face and Hangman became a heel. And you're right about that. I mean, Swerve broke into Hangman's house.
He threatened his baby. He threatened to cradle rob.
And, yeah. Right. So, like, that it was a problem at the time, but we're now so far past that where Swerve is no longer doing heelish things, really. So I'm more forgiving of him becoming the face that way. Hangman, who wasn't on the show, does maybe need to do a bit more to be the heel because he's right for everything that he's been upset about. So I think you can add more to that. I think obviously we're going Swerve Hangman after this, I would imagine. So that'll be interesting. Last thing on the match, I thought JR had a really good call of the win. He goes Swerve, 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 like a really solid call you want in that moment.
Yes, he did.
This is the theme I'm going to say for the show. Really good job by the production team for this show. This is something AEW sometimes struggles in. There were multiple segments they nailed. This was one of them. JR's call of the moment there. And I'm just going to say it. Justin Roberts giving the loud, boisterous, correct call of the new champion added to the moment.
You cannot compare. There was no emotion here. Listen, fantastic for Swerve. I just put him over as hard as I could. I'm a huge fan. By the way, left WWE, signed with AEW, first interview right here on the Getting Over Wrestling podcast. We did an hour with him. You can go find it, right? So no one's a bigger fan of Swerve than I am. But the emotional moment, you can't even make a comparison between Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes. That's what you're getting at, though. It's not comparable. Call,
and then you have Justin Roberts just like pounding that in at
he
the
did.
End.
He did. Great, he was great. Yeah.
Like that. That's, to me, that's what a new champion call is. I don't want to get into the whole thing. Everybody knows my feelings on it. I know I'm the heel in this. I know people are annoyed by it. We had a title. We had a world title change here. And I noticed Justin Roberts' call and I was like, that's
well, it. Yes, that's what happens 99 times out of 100. But there's that one time where it's okay to do something different. And that's what happened previously.
Except she did it multiple times over WrestleMania.
That one was very different than the rest. I think it's fair to say. Let's move on from it. Let's not turn this into a Samantha Irvin podcast. Friend of the show, lover. That's all I'm going to say. To your points about Swerve, though, yes. I mean, deserves the opportunity, deserves the moment. And yeah, no, I'm not going to back down from my stance that he was never legitimized as a babyface. I mean, he's just not. Like it's fair to cheer him, and I'm happy for him, and I'm happy the fans are cheering him, and that's all cool. But you don't just say, okay, because it's been 4 months now, it's okay that people cheer him. He never did anything. He could have saved Prince Nana from getting run over by something and cried over him. There's a million different things that they could have done for him to show a babyface side without having to atone for what he did to Hangman and potentially his kid. But they just never did any of it. Yeah. And I think it's fair to point that out here. Now, he's a babyface. He's going to be a face champion. And yeah, to your point, Hangman Page is going to come back. You would expect them to feud. At this point, I think he's keeping the championship all the way to All In. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But if they're going to fight again, I mean, I think Swerve's record over him, I'm forgetting off the top of my head right now, it's like 2-1 or he's dominated Hangman in this. So if they're going to fight again and Hangman's going to lose again, then he really needs to go psychotic and go full heel, not just heel because the fans are cheering the other guy. So we'll see what happens. Maybe there is a redemptive moment for Swerve in the Hangman feud. That would be pretty cool. But again, we don't know when Hangman's returning, so we can't even really go that far and predict it. So let's go ahead and move to what was the co-main event of the show, the third to last match. In any other case, if you weren't crowning a world champion, it should have gone on last. It's the best way to put it. Will Ospreay against Bryan Danielson. Now, quickly, on Collision Saturday night, Danielson and Claudio Castagnoli fought Konosuke Takeshita and Kyle Fletcher in a bunkhouse match. Bryan cut a promo that he had a lot on his plate, but he didn't address the absurdity of being in a match, let alone with this stipulation, 24 hours before a dream match that's been built for months as an epic. Ospreay stormed in at the end, saying he had nothing to do with any of this. He wants Danielson 100% for Sunday. Bryan didn't believe him. My thought here was maybe they're creating an excuse for a Danielson loss, but that might cheapen the match if they went in that direction because it's supposed to be this all-time showdown. Anyway, this match, the BCC guy's actually pretty cool in jeans and shirts. Totally different look for Bryan. He bladed. The camera zoomed in all the way as Takeshita ripped the cut and blood dripped down his face. Not for me. Kyle bladed as well. There was a great line here from Nigel McGuinness alluding to the necktie incident in WWE. I thought that was awesome. Powerhouse Hobbs interfered late. John Moxley saved. Danielson reversed Takeshka with a hurricanrana into a chair. Claudio hit European uppercuts with a chain on his arm. It looked cool. And Danielson beat Fletcher with the Bazaiku knee and a chain-assisted LaBelle lock, with Kyle taking yet another loss. 3.75 stars, B+. Did you have anything to say about this before we move on?
No, I did not watch it.
Cool. Danielson, after the match, addressed why he was in that match one night before fighting Ospreay. I've been waiting for him to do this. He said it's because bleeding in the ring is heaven to him. Then he promised to beat Will's ass. Tony Schiavone said, God bless Bryan Danielson. Really?
Fair enough.
Electric promo from Bryan. Still, I maintain, completely nonsensical in kayfabe to do this. But let's move on to what happened Sunday night. This was literally announced by Justin Roberts as a dream match. Like I said, it was third to last on the card. Holy shit, AEW chants at the bell. Another AEW chant came after they dodged each other's moves for like 20 seconds. Then the crowd chanted, fuck Don Callis, who was on commentary, but didn't really do anything. Danielson did a spleen kick and it worked. Ospreay hit his handspring kick, then leapt off Brian's chest Guile style for another. He also hit a sky twister outside. Brian countered Hidden Blade by kicking the elbow twice. Then he put in cattle mutilation. Ospreay fully flipped out of a hurricanrana. It was so impressive. He had a tiger driver. Danielson then hit an insane avalanche double underhook German suplex. Perfectly executed. Exceptional sell by Ospreay. He kept himself open for a PK. Danielson slapped him and said, so Ospreay just slugged him with a forearm. I loved this spot. There were a lot of like crazy athletic, smart spots in this entire match. That one I like just as much as any of them. Next was Oz Cutter on the apron and Hidden Blade off the apron for an 8 count outside. Ospreay took advantage with a springboard, almost coast to coast, and a stack powerbomb. 3 submission counters for Brian, plus a counter into a cover that was a clear 3.2, not counted by the referee. He just let it go. Ospreay missed Hidden Blade with Danielson coming back, hitting Bazaiku knee for a real false finish. Sick, sick sequence there. Ospreay then literally picked Danielson up from a triangle choke into a Styles Clash, which was ridiculous. Ospreay got dumped onto his neck, but was luckily okay. He no-sold it into Hidden Blade immediately. Danielson then quickly countered Oz Cutter with a midair Bazaiku knee. They went to opposite corners with Ospreay removing his elbow pad, and they just charged at each other with Ospreay's Hidden Blade beating the Bazaiku knee. He added Tiger Driver with Brian suddenly grabbing his shoulder and neck area. The referee went to the trainer, possibly to call the match. Ospreay saw Danielson exposed, hit another Hidden Blade to get the win in 32 minutes. He erupted in a huge celebration. Brian continued to sell the hell out of his injury for an extended stretch after the bell. Will and Callis both checked on him to make it feel like it was real, and all of it was clearly storyline, and it was an extremely well-done storyline. In fact, I just loved, loved, loved the finish to this match. The standoffs leading to punches and then like a finisher, so dumb when they do that. This standoff, two bulls running head on, playing a game of chicken, knowing that they were even on the scorecards, for lack of a better term, and needed that one knockout blow. And then that leading to an injury sell that not only helped excuse Danielson's loss, but gives him a reason to hate Ospreay when he does return. It might be the best booked match finish in AEW history. And I'm not exaggerating. It accomplished so much, especially when you combine it with the Callis family attacks and Brian expressing doubt about Will on the go home. We talked about how this didn't really have a storyline coming in, and it didn't. It was just two great wrestlers who want to test each other. But there's a storyline coming out of it, which of course is going to lead to a second and probably a third match. And we talked about that on the Ultimate Preview. And then in terms of the match, it was superb. I saw someone, certain someone, call it amazing 10 minutes in when literally nothing had happened yet, rolled my eyes. Once it ended, amazing was way too light of a word for it. The way to describe this match was intensity defined. One of the most intense wrestling matches I've ever seen. One of the best wrestling matches I've ever seen. Your match of the year for 2024, or at worst, co-match of the year, if you prefer the emotional storytelling of Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes. If that's more your flavor, that's fine, but this should be literally no worse than T1 at the end of 2024. I felt a lot more during Roman Cody. This was undeniably more impressive skill-wise. Cannot see anything eclipsing it unless they do a rematch before the year is out. There were so many incredible sequences and fantastic individual spots. This match fucked. And it gets my highest grade, as did Reigns and Rhodes. 5 stars plus, A++.
It's so hard for a match to come in with so much hype and not only live up to it, but far exceed it. I admittedly rolled my eyes when Justin Roberts announced this as a dream match. Mm-hmm. I'm really kind of sick of the term and how everything in AEW has to be a dream match. That's not a story to me. But when it's these two guys,
right,
two of the greatest ever, and maybe the greatest currently doing it right now, this is when it's worth the hype.
Yeah.
And my God, that these guys over deliver. I don't need to repeat everything. You already laid out everything there, but holy crap. This was incredible. This was, again, we'll have the debate at the end of the year for the meaties about match of the year. This will obviously be right there.
Totally.
Just different people have different thoughts on what makes the match, what makes the best matches for them. But I loved the finish, like you said, the knee versus the elbow thing he does.
Hidden blade, yeah.
And they're both going for it, and Ospreay gets it. I loved that spot. That was such a cool spot. The only thing, I didn't like the Bryan injury spot at the end.
Okay, why?
Only because he like does this all the time.
Yeah, it's true.
Like he does these fake seizure spots. He's always getting landing on his head and pretending he's got another head injury. And it was very uncomfortable the first several times he did it. But now he does it so much that I just kind of don't react when I see it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was you're right that they tried to explain it in story and they tried to make it the story. They tried to say Ospreay didn't realize Bryan was hurt at the end and yada yada.
Well, that's like what he's going to say. Bryan's going to say, dude, I was clearly injured. You took advantage of me. You should have, if you were really about the game, then you would have let me get back up and get cleared. And then we would have finished the match. So they have a built-in storyline now. Yeah.
I just don't care for that story because it's okay. A wrestling match. You're getting physical. If somebody mm-hmm. gets hurt, that's because you got out wrestled, you know, like that's okay. Yeah. That's the whole point. But you're right. I mean, Bryan is a heel. He can make that point. And he probably will. That was the only, they really, really leaned into the injury part of it, which I just didn't care for, but
did it diminish it for you?
No.
Okay.
I just was like, why all the doctors and everybody coming in? I was like, this is a bit much. Like, I just want to celebrate the awesomeness of this match, the awesomeness of Will Ospreay. And we kind of got the Dan O'Brien stuff just kind of taking away some attention. Will Ospreay is so obviously the guy yeah, for AEW.
Totally.
Like, we just crowned a new world champion and Swerve Strickland was 100% deserving of that. But it feels like a matter of time before Will yeah. Ospreay is that guy. He is unbelievable. I thought the promos leading up to this were great. The video, a package that they put together for this was great. He just like, you know, WWE's got Cody Rhodes, face of the company guy. Like, Will Ospreay is so obviously that for AEW. He is such a pillar, you know, to use it.
But a real AEW one, term. Like an actual one.
Yes.
Yeah.
Someone you are actually building the company around.
Yes. It's unbelievable. You could argue this was the best to ever do it versus the best doing it right now. And maybe the best to ever do it once he hangs it up in Ospreay. It's just, it was exceptional. You know, I think your point about the finish is fair, and I've certainly criticized it in the past. Look, I don't know how many dream match level bouts Bryan's had in AEW, but it feels like a good majority of them end or include something like a fake concussion or a, you know, injury cell or something like that. And it's like, well, they went back to the well here. And generally, I would kind of roll my eyes at that. The difference being what I said earlier, the fact that they didn't really come into this with a storyline, but they used the first match to create a storyline for their second match. And most likely that'll lead into a rubber match, which may well be the last match of Danielson's quote unquote full-time career. He said he'll never retire, but he obviously is going to stop wrestling full-time. So I could see that type of trilogy happening with this kind of be the launching point for it. The problem is, they didn't really get into this at all until 24 hours before the show. Yeah. Had they built it up earlier, it would have explained why he was in all of these matches. And they could have gotten deeper into why haven't you stopped this family that you're not really even a part of from attacking me? You're supposed to be a good guy. These guys are heels. You know, you could go into so many different versions of that. And they didn't. But it didn't affect the quality of the match itself. And like I said, they used it to build a storyline coming out that has me completely intrigued in what they're going to do going forward. You're right. We're going to have the match of the year conversation at the end of the year, and we'll put it then. But quickly now, because they both happened in the same month, you have Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes. You have Will Ospreay, Bryan Danielson. For me, I'm just going to say it straight up. They're equally great and completely different. And it's not sports entertainment, professional wrestling. It is storyline driven and it is wrestling driven. And both can be amazing. And it's why I'm not even going to like address it on the show. I saw a tweet from an AEW wrestler having to make the comparison and insulting the other one. And it was ridiculous. I think shit like that is so wasteful. Like, this is a thing that we all enjoy, and you can enjoy it in so many different ways. Like I said earlier, I felt I had more emotion in Reigns and Rhodes, but damn it, if this did not send me flying off the walls really late at night on a Sunday.
Yeah, this is why it's good to have two companies, different styles. You know, like so often the WWE style is the same thing over and over. This is why AEW exists, to put on different kinds of matches in different spots. And it was incredible.
All right. We got a lot more show left. Let's get to it.
Real quick. Sorry to just jump back in here. But as we were talking, Will Ospreay in the scrum afterward says he didn't realize that Brian got hurt. He didn't see the doctor call. He wants to apologize for the extra move. Said it in a very somber voice. So, yes, it appears that will be the angle moving forward.
Yeah, that makes total sense. All right. Let's move on to the Women's Championship. Toni Storm against Thunder Rosa on Collision. Storm, with a face full of lipstick after Dynamite, cut a promo saying it's a business, not a charity, and Rosa may be a wrestler, but she's a star. She said hell is in her bedroom, and she bangs her demons every night. This was easily the best promo of this entire timeless run by Toni. So many great one-liners. This is what the character should be on a weekly basis. You want to mix in some of the cheeky stuff occasionally? Fine. The majority of it should be this Toni Storm. That's all I'm going to say.
That's an incredible line.
It's great.
Right there, by the way.
It's amazing. And it was one of six that I'm doing it fast because we're trying to do an instant analysis. It was a great promo. Rosa, for this match, wore a mask to the ring, removed it to reveal no face paint. She did a tornillo into Storm and Luther ringside, and later a missile dropkick and odd Samoan drop inside. I think it was supposed to be a crucifix bomb because she did that next. Then Thunder did a Death Valley driver on the apron. Dual crowd chants. Storm hit a great draping backstabber, plus tornado DDT and a fisherman suplex bridge. Deonna Purrazzo knocked Mariah May off the apron while trying to distract. Then she threw Luther into the steel steps. Storm caught Rosa with a German suplex, a hip attack, and a Storm Zero for a false finish. They exchanged near submissions. Toni pulled the apron into the ring to distract the referee, kicked Thunder in her crotch, and hit what looked like a really nasty Storm Zero onto Rosa's neck to retain the title in about 15 minutes. I hope she's okay. I went from, by the way, never seeing a woman do the low blow to the crotch ever to seeing it used in both companies inside of 4 months, which is pretty amazing. Extremely strong match. Storm's best in this gimmick. Rosa's best since she lost the title. Interesting that every time the momentum picked up here, something kind of happened to bring it back down. Storm obviously had to retain. Rosa got enough of an excuse in the defeat to remain around the main event picture. It does feel like this is headed toward a triple threat or a fatal four-way, a double or nothing. That would make a lot of sense. I went 3.5 stars and a B.
Really good stuff, Thunder Rosa. Really good wrestler. Like, really, really good. And so you put her and Toni Storm together, and they're gonna put together some really good wrestling. Enjoyed the match. I thought this could go either way coming in. I wasn't sure. Again, really good video package coming in. Like, all of these matches had really good video packages. This whole card, like, had stories. And they, like, leaned in of different levels. And they leaned into them going into every match. And this was one of them. Just really solid stuff again. And I continue to like the Timeless Toni gimmick. I know other people are sick of it. I don't watch AEW every single week. But I think, as you said, She showed some new things, different things that work for the gimmick. Also afterward, Toni Storm said, reading off a piece of paper in the press conference, said she saw that Nikki Bella had, she said Nicole Garcia, but she had seen Nikki Bella had thought about coming to AEW, but didn't, which is true. Toni Storm says she didn't because she saw I was here and she doesn't hold a pussy scented candle to me. So some more colorful language there from Toni Storm. I don't know if anything to the Nikki Bella stuff, but good stuff overall.
It's amazing. She said that offhanded, just like in a regular interview or something, and they are thirsting for her just because if they can get any media attention, they try to glom onto it, and it's just crazy. They've mentioned it like three different times now. It's ridiculous. Let's move to the... I would.
Look, Nikki Bella is a star. If you can,
yeah, Nikki Bella was a star. Nicole Garcia is not. I hate to break it to people.
That's fair.
She's just not. They've disappeared. I mean, that's just the truth. Let's move.
I think there's maybe some reasons they disappeared with their family and their father. And
okay. Tag team championships were vacant. FTR and the Young Bucks fought for them in a ladder match. On Collision, FTR and Pac beat the Elite in the main event. There was an audible CM Punk chant midway through the match that was ended by boos from the crowd. We were told no less than four times that the action was magnificent, incredible, etc. It was exciting throughout. All the signatures and finishers were hit. Pac eventually got the fall after nailing Black Arrow. Daniel Garcia, a face, made a three-on-three brawl unfair because he helped the faces, and they stood tall twice to end the show, which kind of told you what was going to happen in this match. Now, this tag team match followed Ospreay Danielson. And man, the crowd was spent when it started, as was I as a viewer.
Yeah.
Dax Harwood was sandwiched in the ladder and hammered with a chair, so he bladed. Cash Wheeler slid underneath a propped ladder and hit a moonsault off of it. No flips, just fists. Next was an EVP trigger on a ladder. FTR did a flying bulldog and sharpshooter, obviously. Matt Jackson got pounced off the apron, going ass first into a table and then head first into the barricade. Then Dax got hurricanrana'd off the apron through a table. FTR did Shatter Machine off a ladder. FTR did their superplex splash combo, both off ladders. Nick did a 450 through a table on one side. Dax did a pile driver into a ladder on the other side. Now, the ladder gave way, and it was actually lucky because it saved what would have been a really dangerous spot. And instead, I think it was Matt just landed on his knee, which was pretty cool. Matt did a sunset flip powerbomb off of a Dax standing on a ladder spot. Cash then took an insanely nasty, like 100 mile an hour tope suicida dive straight into a table that wasn't even fully angled on the barricade. Fans chanted, "Please be careful," which was poignant and probably one of the best chants I've ever heard. It was so appropriate in the moment. Dax hit Matt in the head with a title, only to get pushed off the ladder by Jack Perry, who ran in from the crowd. And then I think Nick grabbed the titles to become champions. And this was exactly the expected finish. And as we say, sometimes predictable things are good. Everyone knows I'm not really a Bucks fan, but they and FTR were put in an unenviable spot following Ospreay and Danielson, and they all completely delivered. This was far too spot heavy for my taste. But I will say, though, that type of unrelenting action, it kept the crowd hot. They didn't really allow it to fall into a lull like it probably would have after an epic match like Ospreay and Danielson. That was extremely difficult to accomplish. They did it. And Perry also got a really strong reaction with a great reveal at the end, even though it was expected. 4 stars, A-.
Look, really good, really solid. Everything you would expect from the Bucks and FTR. Just these guys are great together. And you get what, I don't want to say it was stunning because it wasn't. It was exactly what you would expect to get from them. The Jack Perry thing, again, the production was really good on this spot because the camera zooms in on the face with the Sting mask and then they pull it off and he's smiling and they just leave it there, the camera, and the crowd reacts. They nailed the spot. Perfectly well done. And again, predictable, but expected, and that's fine. It worked. The only thing I thought about, though, was the idea of security rushing in. Because, like, wrestlers in masks sneak into rings all the time. So, like, when does security get involved and when do they not? And maybe I'm just thinking of this too much. And
when they come out of the crowd like that.
Yeah, but that's happened. I mean... The, like it happened, I don't know, it's I don't know. Maybe I was overthinking, but
masked out of a crowd is I think fair to have security come in.
I don't know. Security never stopped Retribution back in the day in WWF.
Retribution did it in front of no one, in front of screens.
I guess that's true.
It's a bad example.
However, the security thing was weird to me. However, it does make sense for the story because he is either actively suspended or not with AEW because
he tore up his contract. Kayfabe, yeah.
So, like, given the story they put around him with the CM Punk stuff and everything like that, like, that would make sense. Mm-hmm. Although, maybe you could have just had Perry run in, he reveals who he is, and then security runs in and gets him or something. I don't know. Either way, they executed it really well. I'm complaining for the sake of complaining.
Yeah, this is a weird one. Yeah, go ahead.
Looking back now that we're at this point, does it change anything you feel about the CM Punk usage?
No, the footage, for the all-in footage, you mean?
Yeah.
Not really. It really doesn't. I mean, it's clear he's getting heat. I think he would have gotten it anyway. I saw people saying, well, this was a brilliant decision because he got booed in New Japan. I mean, it was right in Chicago, but the New Japan show. And he got booed here. He would have gotten booed anyway. I mean, all they did was still make themselves look bad. They popped a rating for 1 week. And when I say popped, it was like 60,000 people. It went immediately down the next week. Do I think Perry is more of a heel now than he would have been? No, because he's still the catalyst that led to Punk leaving the company in the eyes of fans. I'm not saying it's actually his fault. That's the scapegoat character. I'm simply saying it's the same character. They didn't need to show footage for that to be the case. The footage didn't make him look like the aggressor, or didn't make it look like it was his fault. I thought the ham-fisted angle around it with like the Bucks introducing it and then FTR cutting the promo after the fact, I didn't think that helped either. So I still believe it was the wrong decision. I will accept an argument otherwise, but the truth is we'll never know because we can't reverse back or rewind back and then play it all out without showing the footage because we can't reverse time. We're not in Avengers Endgame.
I think it was overall still bad for AEW and it looked poor upon them to do it.
Yes.
But I also think Perry got more heat in this moment and has more heat right now than he would otherwise. Because, yes, CM Punk talking about it kind of did that as well.
See, that's what I think it was more that than anything else.
That's the thing where, like, If Punk interview doesn't happen, if AEW doesn't show the footage and you have Jack Perry come back, I think the response is like a
close. Oh, very, okay, very close. Yeah.
But because of Punk and because of AEW, he gets a big reaction. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately what you want. So, like, I see the plan. I see the vision. I still at this point think it probably didn't need to do it.
Yeah.
But look, I'm excited to see Jack Perry the next time he shows up. So, like, that's wrestling.
We understood from the jump what they were trying to do. I mean, there were a lot of reactions to this that were like, oh, this was so dumb because it just proved Punk right and that was it. You and I both had a conversation about this is the goal of what AEW is trying to do here. We just didn't think it was worth it to then make themselves look dumb by airing the footage, promoting it the way they did, and so on and so forth. So I stand by that completely. If I was Tony Khan, I still would not have done that. And if I ever was going to do it, I would have done it, within a couple of weeks or a month or whenever the legal situation was handled after All In. Take advantage of it. Strike while the iron's hot, not while it's freezing cold. And, look, they wanted to thumb their noses at Punk. They figured they could do it both ways. The truth is, if Punk never did that interview, they were never showing the footage. So it clearly wasn't integral to the storyline.
Right.
So what would they have done? They would have just done the exact same thing without the footage. I think it would have worked similarly. I would venture to say the footage added, and I'm bullshitting because we can't know for sure, 15% more heat. that would be my guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely was more either way.
Yeah. All right. Let's move to the Continental Championship. Kazuchika Okada defending against Pac. This opened the main card, started slow until Pac had an avalanche brainbuster. Okada did a draping spike DDT off the barricade. Pac came back with a beautiful springboard moonsault outside. They had a really cool exchange sequence with Pac selling the shit out of a shotgun dropkick. Like, he actually took a shotgun blast into the corner. Okada got the crowd all amped up for him to do his, like, make it rain gimmick, but instead he flicked everyone off with the middle finger. This was, I think, one of three bird spots the entire night, which really, this was the one that was good. The rest of them were completely unnecessary. Pac caught him in a small package for a deadlift German suplex. Both of them were uncounted 3.1s that could have been falls. Fans chanted, fuck Okada. Kazu avoided Black Arrow. Pac twice countered Rainmaker and locked in a standing brutalizer. Okada raked the eyes to break it, but Pac reversed the tombstone. Okada grabbed the referee's leg to interfere with a Black Arrow, then got knees up when Pac tried to execute it, adding Rainmaker for the 1-2-3 to retain the title in 21 minutes. This was an excellent show opener. It did a lot to help build Okada as a heel, which remains a great creative decision for his debut character. More interesting than he's been in a couple of years. I love that they're protecting Rainmaker. I say this every single time. It got ridiculous in New Japan. He would hit it like 12 times in a match, and a guy still wouldn't lose. Now it's one shot, one kill. That's exactly how it should be. Pac also looked super strong. He had multiple close calls and an excused loss because Kazu cheated and or outsmarted him, whichever one you want to call it. He got a deserved ovation after the bell, longer than some title winners actually have gotten in AEW. Nice to have him back. His selling for Okada made this entire match. 4.25 stars A.
This was awesome, man. Like, this was so, like, the show starts and you see this is the match. I'm like, holy crap, we're getting Pac Okada. Like, it's the opener on a loaded show. Pac is, he might be like the most underrated wrestler out there. He's always so good. Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised with how long he's been with AEW that he just hasn't like gotten bigger. Like, not physically, but just like been a bigger deal. But then, like, he's had so many stops and starts, injuries, COVID, different things. And so he's never been able to consistently be on television, be a great heel, because, man, this was a reminder of just how freaking good he is. And, like, you want to talk about dream matches, this is certainly one of them. And everything in the match worked. Great stuff.
International Championship, Roderick Strong defending against Kyle O'Reilly on Rampage. O'Reilly, Matt Menard, and Rocky Romero beat Undisputed Kingdom. O'Reilly won with submission, and he cut a nothing promo after the bell. On one hand, it was smart because it helped Kyle look stronger before a title match that he really doesn't deserve. On the other hand, it made an already diminished and poorly booked Undisputed Kingdom group look even weaker because they couldn't beat this random thrown-together trio. But let's move on. So for this match, no surprise, it was a technical showcase. Strong was the aggressor, hitting two Uranagi backbreakers, among other backbreakers. He did an Olympic slam and a running forearms. O'Reilly hit a draping knee, a flying version of it, and a knee bar. There was a well-done extended strike sequence, but it included a lot of no-selling. Strong landed hard on his shoulder on the ring apron when Wardlow then tried but failed to interfere. O'Reilly took advantage, but Strong eventually got over with End of Heartache to retain the title. Adam Cole rolled out after the bell, and then stood from his wheelchair to a pop. He walked to the ring. He gave O'Reilly a look, then gave Wardlow a stink eye twice behind the back, right to the back of his head. And that played into the issues after Wardlow lost to Joe months ago. He was supposed to win that and bring the title to Undisputed Kingdom. Now, it would be quite something for Undisputed Kingdom to, like, excommunicate the most interesting guy in the entire faction. But it would also be curious to see, is this a situation where MJF returns and saves Wardlow and they make good and they feud with Cole? Just remember I said that. Anyway, back to Dynasty. Very much back in the day, ROH type of match, like 15 years ago. It went way too long. It was more than 17 minutes. And while the wrestling was strong bell-to-bell, it didn't really excite, nor did this deserve to be on the pay-per-view in any conceivable way. It went 3.75 stars B+.
Yeah, this was okay. It was too long. It did drag a little bit in parts. I don't know how to feel about Cole, because, like, he's always there. He constantly is showing up. It's good that he can walk. I hope he can wrestle soon, but this whole storyline has been weird. I will say the video package, again, really well done, but Kyle O'Reilly, Roderick Strong, I'm just like, eh, I don't really care. And then you have Cole come out in the end and you're like, oh yeah, here's the cool guy. Here's the one in this group that we actually right. care about. And so he just kind of takes the attention away again. Yeah, I don't know. Don't really have many thoughts or what happens next.
All right. TBS Championship, Julia Hart against Willow Nightingale in a House Rules match on Collision. Willow, Chris Statlander, and Stokely Hathaway had a pretty fun world star meme-like backstage promo. It didn't add to the match, but they had a good time, so that was cool. For the match, Willow's rule was that Stat and Sky Blue would be banned from ringside. Her family was ringside, and Stoke was on commentary. Willow was aggressive at the bell with a huge boot, then got double boots up on a moonsault later before hitting Dr. Bomb for the 1-2-3 in less than 7 minutes to win the title. With what I'd call surprising ease, Stat and Stoke gave her a best friend style hug after the bell. Mercedes Moné entered with her booty dances. And it was interesting that really it was only the track doing the CEO chants. The crowd really was not into it. She confronted Willow. She held up the title and the segment ended. The first two matches on this card, both men's matches, averaged more than 19 minutes. This got one third of that average time for a title change, ending a reign that lasted 154 days, you know, a little bit under half a year. It was shockingly short. Now, someone did tell me that Julia has been sporting an injured shoulder. Okay, you could still go 8 to 10 minutes or make it a semi-squash that creates a storyline out of it, especially because both of these women can go. This should have been a crowning moment for Willow. Instead, it was like, oh, okay, she won a title. Also clear to me, Mercedes has lost any semblance of momentum that she had entering AEW. It's almost shocking. I don't want to say that she's unimportant, but it just doesn't feel like a big deal to see her on screen. And she's getting a title match despite doing nothing. I went 2.5 stars in a C.
The match was disappointing for exactly what you said. I was hoping for more. I wanted a long match, especially when you're getting a title change. Like you said, like it needs to feel like a crowning moment, and it didn't. And if Julie Hart was hurt and could not go very long, okay, then I guess you do what you can. Because, I mean, every other match on this card was at least 16 minutes long,
yeah.
15 minutes long. This was like a third of that.
The kickoff show matches were long as hell too. Yeah.
Yes. So like, again, yeah, maybe the injury was the thing. And if it was, okay, nothing you can do about that. But that was extremely disappointing. And the Mercedes Moné stuff, look, it's not important when she shows up anymore because she hasn't wrestled. It's been a month. And if she's hurt and she's not cleared and she can't, then like, okay, like then maybe you shouldn't have done that so quickly.
They wanted three straight reveals. That's what they wanted. You know.
Yeah, and I know she had been signed for a while before that anyway, mm-hmm. and you know, John Ross Sapp kept telling everybody she signed, and so I guess at some point you got to do it, but like, yeah, there's nothing going on. She hasn't been doing anything. I also noticed, I don't know if you mentioned it on the pod or not, but the CEO chant in the song was very much sped up now. It's not, it goes CEO. CEO.
Oh, did they? I didn't notice
CEO.
That.
Oh, yeah, it goes way quicker now, at least compared to her debut when I, you know, saw that.
Song sucks. It's terrible entrance music.
It's terrible. It's awful. Yes.
Yeah.
But look, we need her in a story. And I still like is I guess the story is going to be Willow injured her.
She got injured in that match. And
yeah.
Didn't win the title she was supposed to win. So now she's
going to go back to that, which
fine,
I guess. I really don't like when New Japan stories are the stories in AEW, but if you want to use that to explain why Mercedes has been out, sure, but they're not even acknowledging it that she's hurt right now. So like, I don't know. It feels like we've just been waiting to get to when Mercedes can be cleared and we can do Willow Mercedes and then we kick things off. So like maybe that's it.
And then she has the mid-card title and entrance theme is chanting just, CEO louder than the fans still. I mean,
she's lost all momentum because she doesn't do anything. All she does is come in and cut promos, and she's not a good promo.
Which is the worst part of her skill set, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, totally. There's nothing... Yeah. Look, she looks incredible, and I hope she can get in the ring. Like, her wrestling is what is her greatest attribute. So, like, we got to get to that, and until then, it's just kind of whatever.
So I looked it up. So this was 6 minutes flat. The second shortest match was the other women's match, Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa. That went 15:08. So the two shortest matches on the show were both the women's matches, and everything else got 16 plus or longer. So there you go. All right, let's move to Adam Copeland, Eddie Kingston, and Mark Briscoe against House of Black. On Collision, Cope, Kingston, and Briscoe beat Top Flight in Action and Andretti in what I guess logically was a tune-up match against the same opponents the House faced last week. The faces hit their finishers in succession and each held up their titles. Also a reminder of how many titles are on AEW TV. House turned the lights off, set ominous shit in their standard style. Malakai Black told Copeland, for them, hell is where the heart is. Maybe that plays into their TNT title rivalry coming out of Dynasty. That was my expectation. So we had this match. Briscoe used a chair on the apron to do a step-up somersault on Brody King outside. He got revenge with a nasty Death Valley driver into the barricade. The faces blatantly broke tag rules multiple times, which was odd. The entire lack of tagging after that was not odd. It was pretty typical. King nearly lost his footing, but luckily regained it on a superplex. King took a spinning back fist impaler DDT and froggy bow for a broken fall. Then there was a choreographed triple spear. Malakai Black countered a spear with Black Mist to, I almost called him Edge, Adam Copeland, and hit the end for the win. Now, I didn't call the missed spot, but I should have. Malakai over Cope is exactly what I wanted when we talked about this match on the Ultimate Preview. So I was thrilled with the result. Not just the right winners, but the right combination in the fall. The only reason to do this trios match was to build for Black to get a TNT title match. And this should be an awesome one-on-one feud between them, probably ending a double or nothing. Would have preferred this as a TV main event. I don't think it needed to be on Dynasty, but it was fun. 3.5 stars and a B.
Yeah, it was a fun match. Exactly what it needed to be. Good spots, the right winner. That like you said, TV main event. The trios unification probably should have been on the main card instead of this.
Instead of this, among other matches, yeah.
But look, it's Edge. It's Malakai Black. I guess you want him on the pay-per-view. You know, is what it is.
It's going to be intriguing to see how Copeland sells the Mist. I could see him doing a semi-brood version of the character. Could also see him eventually turning heel because of it, which would be enough reason for him to team with Christian Cage again for the final stretches of their careers if they decide to do that. So that is an outlaying concept for us to consider.
And also, it was a lot of Mist.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that much of Mist before. He was Adam Copeland. He looked like he was wearing blackface afterward with how much he had there, and it's all over his shoulders.
Nearly
too.
Problematic.
It was a lot.
A nearly problematic Mist spot. FTW Championship Hook defending against Chris Jericho on Collision. Jericho cut what was supposed to sound like a half-hearted babyface promo, saying he was going to teach Hook lessons in the ring and in life based on their match. I know people are down on this, but I still have liked the storyline, even if the execution is off. So for the match, Jericho got booed, but he fist bumped at the bell. He nearly, but thankfully, did not bump his head on the steel steps during a German suplex ringside. Then Hook did a T-bone suplex off the apron through a table. Jericho was fine. Hook may have hit his head on the side of the table. Fans chanted, "Go home, Jericho, go home, and please retire." Hook covered Jericho in a trash can and hit him with a kendo stick. Then did a T-bone suplex. Jericho no-sold a suplex and hit a code breaker. He escaped Red Rum by falling backwards into a table. Jericho wasn't allowed to cheat with the ropes in an FTW match. I legitimately don't know if that was correct or not correct by the referee. Jericho mule kicked to escape another Red Rum. Then he hit Judas Effect for a false finish kickout. Then he said, "I'm sorry," hit it again, but he delayed the cover. So we got another false finish. Stupid idiot. Jericho then grabbed his bat. He yelled for Hook not to make him do it. So he flipped him off with double birds and then ate a bat shot to the head. And Jericho won the FTW title. Hook and trainers, Taz and trainers checked on Hook after the bell. Now, I said in the Ultimate Preview that Jericho winning the FTW title would be far more interesting than the other outcome. So I'm actually happy they did it, even if many of you I know clearly disagree. It was achieved in a smart manner, also with Hook requiring a lot of punishment to be pinned, and Jericho was able to maintain his gimmick of seeming like he was legitimately trying to help, whether that ends up being his true disposition or not. Not a great match, but as I've said for multiple weeks, I'm into the storyline, even though I dislike the execution. Those retire chants, though, were pretty harsh. I went 2.5 stars and a C, and I know that might be high. People are much lower than that.
Yeah, the match was kind of whatever, but it wasn't really about the match. I'm like you. I thought the story was fine. And, like, the go away Jericho, please retire, like, that's also part of the story.
They're leaning into it, yeah.
Yeah,
but it's real feelings. It's X-Pac.
Yeah, they're leaning into the idea that Jericho is latching himself onto young stars to keep himself relevant and stay around. Like, that is the story. And he's getting a lot of heat. Mm-hmm. It's working. So, like, yeah. And Jericho winning the FTW championship, it feels a lot like him winning the Ring of Honor championship. You know, like, there's things you can just lean into that heat. And look, he still is very much a heat magnet and really good promo and everything. Obviously, plenty of reason for him to stick around. The one, I don't want to call it production error, but there was one, the end of this match was a little bit weird. First off, the bat spot, I loved it. How often do you see someone just hit somebody in the head with a bat? Like, and I know he didn't really hit him and all that stuff, yada, yada, but like, it's a good spot. You know, it good spot to do. It makes sense. But before he pinned him, before Jericho pinned Hook, Taz stood up on commentary and the crowd went, oh, because they thought Taz was going to get involved in the match.
Right.
And then it goes 1, 2, 3, and Taz just comes in to check on him. So I think Taz may have stood up too early there and kind of made the finish a little bit weird. But, you know, it makes sense. And I was curious if Taz would do anything or will do anything moving forward. I don't know. But, yeah, I thought this was exactly what it should be. Look, like, it's not like Hook has a ton of momentum and heat or anything either. I think this has been fine.
You know, you've been putting over production this entire show, and I got to tell you, I didn't find it to be that great throughout the entire Dynasty. And I don't write as many notes about production when I'm watching pay-per-views because I'm doing the matches and all the stuff that we're talking about here on the show. But the one thing that stuck out to me, and I didn't mention it because it wasn't worthwhile, is they fully Kevin Dunned the end to Ospreay Danielson. There was like 4 camera cuts in that when they were standing in the corners, they got the final shot, but it was like close up and half the screen. They completely botched that. So
yeah,
okay, maybe they had their moments.
I would have done the hard cam.
Hard cam. I want to see the whole thing transpire, nothing else. Yeah. So you can put them over, but the most important moment on the entire show, they botched. And I don't know that the rest of it was as great as you're saying. I trust you. I'm just saying, I know the one thing I noticed was terrible. So let me put it that way.
Fair enough. And I don't put the Taz thing really on production. I think that was more on Taz.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah. Trios Championship, the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn, the AEW Trios Champions fought the Bang Bang Gang, the ROH 6-Man Champions in a title unification match. And this was on, yes, 0 hour. Now on Collision, the Guns beat Acclaimed in 10 minutes by cheating. Before the match, Tony Schiavone randomly took a microphone threatening that they wouldn't wrestle at Dynasty if they avoided this match. But everyone was already there, ringside, ready to go. Like, I don't understand what the point of that was, to suggest they're cowards. Like, it was so strange. Now look, it's not unusual in wrestling to preview a pay-per-view match with competitors squaring off on the go-home show, but this was 2/3 of the match 24 hours before the show. It just seemed like an odd decision. Max Caster's rap was, I mean, questionable at best. And I guess they dropped the whole gimmick of him like bumbling it after that one legit screw up or two. And they just tried to make it a thing. Anyway, moving to Dynasty, also odd was putting a title unification match on a pre-show and putting the FTW title on the main show. Caster did one rap with music and another a cappella, both better than Collision. Neither would have gotten legit pops without him cursing in them. Colton caught his dad from behind with a Famouser. Jay White then slammed Billy in the back with his golden bat as the Guns hit 310 to Yuma for a false finish. Billy overpowered White for a Famouser with Caster flying in for mic drop and another false finish. White eventually countered Billy into Blade Runner and got the win. The Billy Gunn false finish was like a joke as far as I was concerned, especially given this is on a kickoff show. But it was a title unification match, which again is why it probably shouldn't have been on 0 hour. The right team won, thankfully. I've been done with Acclaimed for a year. I'm at like 2.75 stars C+.
Yeah, look, the right team won here. I'm glad we don't have 2 sets of trios titles. Made no sense. You had to do this. But this should have been on the main card. You know, it was a big match, whatever you think of it. If you think these guys have been with each other for far too long, which I do, if you think Jay White should be nowhere near a trios title and should instead be in a world title picture, I completely agree with you. And I've been saying that since pretty much he signed with AEW.
Yeah.
I also think a lot of people seem to think Max Caster might get in trouble for some of the raps, especially the last one mentioning talk to the legal team about getting the taste of my, you know what out of your mouth. You know, not great, but that's also the point. You know, that's that's what he's doing. So Billy Gunn's hair also looked a little weird. I put that in my notes. It was just cut in weird spots. And yeah, you know, needed to happen. Glad it happened. I'd like to say now everybody can move forward, but obviously Jay White is going to be sticking around as part of the Bang Bang Gang as a trios champion. So onward we go.
Yeah. There's two more matches. I'm going to just do them together. I don't even know if you saw them. Orange Cassidy and Katsuyori Shibata against Shane Taylor Promotions and Zero Hour. Anthony Ogogo interfered early from commentary. There was really not much to this. Cassidy eventually hit Orange Punch to pin Lee Moriarty. There was no reason for this to be on the show. Total TV match. I actually love the idea of STP. I wish it had legs and personalities to be more, but the people involved scream lower mid-card. It's almost like the new QTV. No grade. I was driving my car at the time, watching on my phone. It'd be somewhere in the C range. We also had Trent Beretta against Matt Sydal in Zero Hour. Sydal was a hometown guy in St. Louis. Beretta showcased his new heel character, staying aggressive throughout, and he won via submission. Sydal, the other one, ran in to check on his brother. So Beretta attacked with Chuck Taylor running down, and it ended with Beretta demanding Taylor decide whether he was basically with him or against him this coming Wednesday. He had to give him the answer. Solid kickoff show action. Again, would have just preferred this on TV. Also, no grade while I was driving. It was in the C-plus area, something like that. Did you get to see these, and do you have any thoughts on them?
I thought Ogogo was actually pretty interesting on commentary. That's kind of my only thoughts on that. But and look, they said we'll get an answer from Chuck Taylor on Wednesday. So, look, you have a perfectly fine kickoff match, and you tease something on the next show. Mission accomplished.
Are you tuning in Wednesday to find out what Chuck Taylor has to say to Trent Beretta?
I don't think so, because I'm going to be at a college football playoff meeting that's supposed to go all day.
Would you tune in? Would you tune in to hear what Chuck Taylor has to say to Trent Beretta if you were home and we're not otherwise going to be watching Dynamite?
I'm a big Trent Beretta guy. I always thought with the Best Friends, I was like, he just looks like he should be a bigger star, but his character was always so like too like chill and whatever, and he like didn't seem like he cared enough. So now him turning heel, like, I'm interested in this.
Okay.
We need to get moving on it, but I'm interested.
Fair enough. All right. Let's move to the grading portion of this AEW Dynasty instant analysis. Now, for pre-show expectation grades on the Ultimate Preview, you heard the Silver King give an A-. And I actually got a lot of tweets and DMs saying, Silver King, you're being way too generous for the show. Most of this card is not great. It's really top heavy. How can you say A- when you said that? I think about one of the nights, WrestleMania, I think I said A for both nights. Like, you think this is going to be nearly as good as the WrestleMania card? I go, guys, I think it's going to be an A-, simple as that. So I polled the audience. All of you are getting overheads on Twitter at Getting Overcast. And you made your voices heard. You disagreed with me totally. 24% A, 54% B, 15% C, 7% D to F, and 86 out of 100, which is a flat B. That's probably the greatest disparity we've had in expectation grades for a show, probably in the history of this podcast. Now, Chris, you were not on the Ultimate Preview, and we did not talk before the show, but let's be honest, coming in, what was your pre-show expectation grade for AEW Dynasty?
It was A-.
Okay.
I enjoyed the effort being put in for most of the stories on this, and the card looked really solid. I'm very surprised that B was a pre-show grade. That was stunningly low for
me. Very flat B. I mean, as flat as it gets. So those were the pre-show expectation grades. As always, Chris, I let you go first when we give our final grades for pay-per-views and premium live events. What is your final grade for AEW Dynasty?
I'm going with A-. Everything was solid. There was nothing on the show that was bad. And we also got some really fantastic stuff, including the ladder match, including Will Ospreay and Brian Danielson, including the main event. Those were three really, really, really good matches, obviously, to close the show.
Okada and Pac also earlier.
Yeah, awesome match to kick off the show. You've got a TBS championship change as well. You've got title unifications on a kickoff show. Like, it was a very impactful show. A lot of stuff mattered. You had really good matches, and there's moments I'm going to remember. So, this is very easy A- for me.
I'm right there with you. I think the A- is the perfect grade for this show. You had a match of the year. Again, whether it is the singular match of the year, a contender for it, or maybe a T1 match of the year, you had it on the show. And that, I did think, carried a lot of water. Other than that, there was not another, as far as I was concerned, like, exceptional match. It was a one-match card in that degree. But the second tier was immensely strong with all the matches that you mentioned. I also was very pleased that we got Toni Storm's best match in this timeless character. We got a nice return from Thunder Rosa, obviously, in the same match in terms of her stepping up her game again. And, you know, I disagree with you to some degree from like a storyline standpoint. There were a number of matches here that either had no story or very little story coming in, and they were just kind of thrown together by a simple challenge or whatever the case might be. That said, there was a lot of story on AEW Dynasty, and I appreciated that, as mentioned earlier multiple times, with Ospreay and Danielson. So I completely agree with you. This is an A-minus show, flat A-minus as far as I'm concerned, and that is a deserving, praiseworthy grade. It wasn't top to bottom strong enough to be an A or an A+, but that's okay. This was probably the first time in a couple AEW pay-per-views where I felt, and this is what we always come down to, that the $50 I spent was worthwhile. It was definitely worthwhile.
Good. I would say they've done it twice in a row now. I mean, I thought Revolution Sting's Goodbye. I think I gave that show an A. I think we've had back-to-back really good pay-per-views. The TV week to week is hit and miss, but AEW has gotten back to what it was at the beginning, which was when there's an AEW pay-per-view, you know it's going to be worth your money.
I remember World's End.
I think we've gotten that twice this year.
I remember World's End was definitely not worth it. We agreed.
Yes,
correct. I don't remember Revolution. Maybe it was like I could have done it or not done it. I mean, we do it anyway for the show, but it's in terms of like, at the end, was it worth it for the viewer? If I was a viewer and didn't have a podcast, would I be happy that I paid that money? And tonight, I most certainly was, and clearly you were as well. As were, by the way, our listeners, our Getting Overheads, who voted on Twitter at Getting Overcast. Now, the percentages keep changing because there's still 28 minutes left in the poll, but we're somewhere around 34% A+ to A, 44% A- to B+, 13% B to B minus, and then 9% C plus or lower for the show. And yes, we have changed our grading scale in many cases for the post shows because I'm not suffering the D and F grades, which are absolutely ridiculous when you know a show is damn good. Anyway, this averages out to an 89.99, which of course rounds up to a flat 90 and an A minus. So you may have been down about it coming in, but all of you came around, agreed with the Silver King and Vintage. On the way out, AEW Dynasty, a flat A- pay-per-view. Chris, any final thoughts before we wrap up this edition of the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast?
Just that back-to-back, two of the best AEW pay-per-views that I think they've ever done. Real solid. I think the future is bright. You've got a new world champion. You've clearly got a new star in Will Ospreay. Everybody wants to talk about the TV ratings, the attendance, yada, yada. Like, to me as a fan, I just want a good show. And twice now in 2024, AEW has given us a really good pay-per-view. And we've got another one a month away now that I'm looking forward to.
Speaking of good shows, Chris, that's what we do here on the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast. And we have a bevy of them ahead for you next week. So let me go ahead and run down our three-show schedule. We will be back on Tuesday with the next WWE edition of the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast. We're going to break down every single thing that happened across SmackDown and Raw over the last week, plus a ton of WWE news items. We will be back on Wednesday with a special WWE mock draft edition of the show. We're also going to clean up any extraneous news and notes, anything we want to talk about still from WrestleMania week all the way till now that we have not covered. They could be DMs from you. They could be notes from interviews, whatever the case. We're throwing that all together in a special bonus WWE edition on Wednesday. And then we will come back for our third episode on Thursday. The fallout from AEW Dynasty and, of course, the results from NXT Spring Break in week one. It's a two-part special event on television for NXT. So we have a loaded week coming at you from the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast. And if you want to thank us for that, well, you can remember that this show
is all about Defy.
So head on over to Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple. Take a little extra time. Leave a 5-star written review. If you do, we will read it live right here on the show. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Getting Overcast for episode drops, news, analysis, highlights, all of that good stuff. It is also where you get to vote in the pre and post show polls we mentioned on today's episode. And you can send us DMs and tweets, questions and comments that we will read on the show. Please also remember,
I happen to love the number 5.
And I hope you do as well, because for $5 a month or $50 for the entire year, you can become an official Getting Overhead. Just visit buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Sign up. You will get bonus audio, the fastest 5 minutes in professional wrestling, instant reactions to Raw on Monday, NXT on Tuesday, Dynamite on Wednesday, SmackDown on Friday. Plus, you get exclusive news posts every single Friday. Again, you get all of it at buymeacoffee.com/gettingover. Thank you all so much for listening to this instant analysis edition of the Getting Over Wrestling Podcast. As noted, we will be back next week with 3 huge shows. For Vintage Chris Vanini, this is the Silver King, Adam Silverstein, signing off and leaving you with just 3 final words. Bye for now.